Welcome everyone to today's Medical Advisory Committee meeting. We'll go ahead and get the meeting called to order. And Dr. Snyder, I will give you the floor for introductions.
I would like to introduce our new administrator to begin with. Abby retired at the end of August, and so our new administrator is well known to most of you. So welcome to Troy Haley.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. I think I know everybody fairly well that's participating, but I know I've got big shoes to fill. I think I've heard that phrase used about 198 times now. So, so far so good though. I've been able to tread water. So, but if you need anything, you know where to reach me.
The second introduction is for Amanda Terry. Amanda is taking, Troy's place as legislative liaison and director of the penalty program, as well as legal services. So welcome to Amanda. She's also been with the Bureau for quite a while. And taking her place with the compliance unit is Claudia Byers, who usually doesn't attend these meetings, but she may be familiar to some of you. So with that, then, let's go ahead with the introductions. For those of you on the telephone, we have a list of those that are presently signed in: Faith Parrish, Mark Finks, Dr. Bellner, Larry Brinton, Dr. Hazelwood, Dr. Talmadge, Terry Horn, Dr. Kaiser, Dr. Cole, Dr. Tudor, David Price, David Nelson, Dan Hedrick, Amy Moses, and I would like to introduce our newest member, Amy Moses. So she comes to us from McKee Foods. She's a health and safety manager, and I'd like to welcome her to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Glad to be here. Excited to be a part of this committee.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you serving. Dr. Brophy, and there are two other telephone. One's a 447-8860 number. Who is that?
If that was 0220, that's Alex O'Neill with Arbicare.
Okay. And okay. And then there's a 615 number, 447-8860. Who is that? Okay.
This is Roy Johnson. I'm on the phone as well.
Oh, okay. Good. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Okay.
Sure.
So
Good deal. Is that everyone?
Yes. So I have.
Yeah, that should give us a quorum easily.
Yes, Dr. Tudor, and Dr. Snyder, that gives you a quorum. You have more than enough for a quorum.
Okay, thank you. The one person I didn't announce who is here is Misty Williams. She's with me in the office here.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then other staff members, Susie Douglas and Suzanne Gaines, are both with us as well. Okay,
right.
Dr. Tudor, turn it
All
over
right.
to you. We've got
Very
a
good. Welcome again to everyone. Hopefully everyone's had a chance to review the minutes from the May 10th meeting. Dr. Snyder sent those to us with last week's email. Do we have any comments, changes, addendums, retractions from the minutes? If not, be more than happy to take a motion to accept those minutes.
I'll move, Rick Cole.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Excellent. Any opposed? No? Very good. We'll accept the May 10th minutes. So I think since our last meeting, a new fiscal year has started for the state. So excitement on our end. That means we need a new conflict of interest form from everyone. The form was as well attached to the email from last week. So if everyone can complete one of those forms, and Susie, do you still want to receive those forms, or is there someone else we should send those to?
You may send those to me. Thank you very much.
Ah, perfect. So yeah, we'll get the conflict of interest form sent in to Susie.
The other person that just joined was committee member Rob Benke. So welcome.
Hey, Rob. All right. Okay. I think that takes us into, to our old business. ODG update from July 29th. Has everyone had a chance to review that? Dr. Snyder, any, points of interest?
There were, recommended statement updates for a number of, spinal cord stimulators, dorsal root ganglion stimulation, and other interspinous space devices for spinal stenosis, rotator cuff patching, and changes to impingement syndrome surgery. So all of these had recommendation statement update, criteria update, and evidence summary updates.
All right.
Any comments on those? Anybody have any questions concerning those or anything that we need to forward to ODG?
And they look pretty much in line with what the doctors are ordering right now.
Okay. Could we have a motion to accept?
I'll motion to accept those.
Thank you, Misty.
Very good.
And is there a second?
I'll second it, Hazelwood.
Thank you. Anyone opposed to the updates? No? All right. Very good. I think that's the quickest ODG update on record.
We have, we have one other thing. So, there was it's called a 10X, T-E-N-E-X procedure, which is a type of percutaneous tenotomy that's done for tennis elbow for lateral epicondylitis at the elbow. And it was denied by one of the reviewers, and it was not supported by ODG. Dr. Talmadge had three new references for that procedure from the time that their review had been done, and ODG has accepted those and is in the process of revising their recommendation on that procedure based upon the new medical evidence that we support, that we sent to them. So ODG continues to be quite receptive and amenable to suggestions from us. So I'd just like to note that in the minutes.
Very good. Very good. All right. We'll move ahead to the AMA Guides 6th edition update. Hope everyone saw Dr. Snyder's email from yesterday. that outlined our position, I thought, very well. Dr. Talmadge, do you have any, I'm sure you do have more to address?
Perhaps, but I've summarized on that update the current status of the digital editions, particularly if you're in a group practice and you're a physician listening, be aware the AMA will not print any more books, and the AMA closed its bookstore. You cannot purchase the 2008 book we use in Tennessee, the sixth edition, from the AMA. Amazon is sold out. Barnes & Noble is sold out. So there are a few minor online vendors from whom you can still buy the textbook. But if you, like TOA has lots of doctors and they take in new doctors, and if each new doctor wants a copy, it may soon be hard to get a copy unless you go to eBay and get a used one with someone else's markings in it. So at least be aware that acquiring the hardbound textbook is becoming increasingly difficult. If there are any questions about the status of the specific 2023 potential updates, neurology and spine, I'll be happy to answer those. But
I would assume that our action that we took at the May 10th meeting to defer a vote pending additional information, I guess that would continue to apply at this point, pending release of the 2023 spine and neurology chapter updates. Or we don't do we need to take another action on the guides this meeting, or are we good with the action that we took last meeting?
We're okay until, I believe, probably the first of the year, until there's effective changes that are substantive.
Okay. And I'm sorry, if anyone has a question regarding those, but I'm not sure how much we have on those yet.
Dr. Talmadge
to address much, questions.
Yeah.
Wrote them.
Dr. Talmadge summarized them pretty well. So
Yeah.
As to what chapters are involved.
All right. Well, very good. If no further questions or discussion there, we'll move ahead. Next up, medical fee schedule and Medicare update. I know last time we were talking about payer notifications regarding the change to the OCMED physicians and PMR physicians notifications, and then some discussion around state-specific Z codes.
The new fee schedule updates have been posted on the Secretary of State website. Okay. So there are changes to Chapter 17, which is the general rules, changes to Chapter 18, which is the specific payment, and Chapter 19, the inpatient rules. So, just to give you some further information on that, the changes, we have partnered with Fair Health to provide rate tables. So, one of the main changes is, instead of each of the providers or each of the insurance companies having to calculate Tennessee rates. They will be published free to the providers and to the insurance companies by Fair Health when we get an idea about when the rules will become effective. And so that depends upon the rules dates. The public hearing for the medical fee schedule changes is going to be November the 8th, which is I believe it's a Tuesday, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That will be by telephone and also in person. But changes or suggestions or comments to the medical fee schedule changes will be accepted from now on, now until 2 weeks after the public hearing. So be aware of that. Other changes that have been made is using current terminology for anesthesia services. We have also added a modifier that will allow the occupational medicine and pulmonary or PM&R physicians to use a special modifier on their bills to identify them. There's been recommended additional reimbursements to other subspecialty physicians to increase the attractiveness and access that include pulmonology, psychiatry, cardiology, neurology, and clinical psychologists. All of the certain payment codes, CPT codes that were special to Tennessee have been changed to Z codes, Tennessee-specific Z codes. And those will be identified then for things, particularly one of the biggest problems had to do with coding and getting paid for missed appointments. And so there's a special Z code for missed appointments that will now not look like a 99199 code that gets kicked back by the insurance companies for unspecified services. Certain laboratory procedures, payment for those procedures have been reduced in line with national and regional values. And then finally, the changes to the inpatient fee schedule are limited to removing the necessity of applying the inpatient only list from Medicare to payment for inpatient services. So that will impact a very small number of services, but there's been no actual changes in the calculation for the inpatient reimbursements. And then finally, we have received word from the NCCI, the National Council of Commerce Compensation Insurance, that the changes that we have made will have a negligible impact on the cost to the employers. And hopefully then this will help us attract some hard-to-find specialists. So that's the basics of the changes. We look forward to any comments that you can make, looking then on the Secretary of State's website for the actual rules changes.
So, Dr. Snyder, are the modifiers and Z codes, are those all on the website?
They are.
As well? And will those be part of the Fair Health publication when it comes out? Will it include those aspects as well, or just be a rate table?
No, that it will include those aspects as well. Both the modifiers, as well as the Z codes, will have prices as part of the rate tables. For individuals that work outside of the state of Tennessee, the rate tables are similar to what Kentucky has published, as well as Georgia. But different from both Kentucky and Georgia, we are not charging. There will be no charge to the stakeholders in Tennessee for those services. It's part of our contract with Fair Health.
And that's good. Some of the state fee schedules are very, very pricey.
So
to purchase, yeah.
So look on the Secretary of State's website, and if you have problems finding us, let me know.
Would it be possible to send out a link to that? And do those take effect when it's publicized or now?
No, they will not take effect until after the it's a pretty lengthy process before it is released by the Attorney General's office. So after the public hearing, then the Bureau will take comments into consideration and make the necessary changes. Once those changes have been finalized and approved by the administrator, then it's sent to the Secretary of State's office. Then once the Secretary of State's office has approved those rules, then they're published again on the Secretary of State's website, and then will go before the Government Operations Committee. The effective date of those rules then was generally, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Troy, is 50 days after publication of the final rules from the Attorney General's office on the Secretary of State's website.
90 days.
90 days. I'll take that back. I did need correction.
It's 50 days. We can't have the public rulemaking hearing until 50 days after the notices are filed with the Secretary of State. But then after the AG signs off on the rules, which, like you said, is a fairly lengthy process, we'll file the final version with the Secretary of State, and the effective date is exactly 90 days from the date we file the final rule with the Secretary of State, subject to the approval of the GovOps Committee in that 90-day period.
So it's still a ways off.
A ways off, yeah.
is that correct English, or is that colloquialism?
That's correct in East Tennessee. Yeah. Hopefully some of us are still working when that goes into effect. Any other comments about the fee schedule updates? That's exciting stuff. If not, we'll move on to the rules legislation update. There's one other thing about
Medicare. Okay. So Medicare preliminary announcement reduced the conversion factor by 4.5% going into 2023 from $34.61 to $33.08. As you know, this preliminary finding is subject to revision in November. And then, as always, then it's subject to retroactive changes by the Congress that usually occur in March or April. So, but just be aware that the initial rate coming out of Medicare is reduced for next year. So if you have any input to your congressman, let them know. Medicare also announced further flexibility in telehealth services going in through, I believe it's the end of October or October 13th, definitely, but looking through the end of the year for telehealth services. Also changes to shared savings programs and also integration of behavioral health services all have been addressed by Medicare in their announcement that came out in July. So look that up if you have further questions for those.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Dr. Snyder. So I guess legislation update, Amanda, will that now be you, I guess, giving us those updates?
It will now be me.
Wonderful. Finally, we'll learn something. Nothing personal, Troy. Nothing personal. No. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Well, Amanda is from now on. Amanda is going to be the Bureau's legislative person, and she will handle all of the Bureau's legislation and attend all the legislative meetings and committee meetings and such. I'm just there for backup. But on this particular update, legislative update, there really is none this time of year. Amanda will attend the governor's legislative team retreat at the end of September. I think that's next week.
Next week, yeah.
And she'll learn a lot of good stuff and meet a lot of interesting people. And she will, our administration bill is basically already in the can. We had to turn that in back in June, so we're waiting on any final revisions there, but that'll be filed sometime in January. As far as rulemaking, Dr. Snyder did a really good job about the medical fee schedule rules and the status on that. I don't really have anything to offer there. Amanda, did you have anything to offer?
No, sounded good to me.
The only other rules changes that we have is to announce that the utilization review rules go before the Government Operations Committee next Tuesday, the 27th, and that's at the Legislative Plaza, so that will be very interesting. Those rules have been, would go into effect, I believe, did you say September the 29th? Troy, on that?
We're in GovOps on the 27th, and the effective date is the 29th. We appreciate all the hard work. Many of the people on the Medical Advisory Committee participated in that work group that Dr. Snyder organized, and there were others, too. And it's been a long road. We've made some good changes, and we hope that these changes will make a positive impact in the UR system. And we know that's not a perfect system, but we're doing what we can to try to make it better. And I appreciate all the hard work that's gone into that.
Did you say effective October 29th or September?
September 29th.
September 29th.
Right.
September 29th. Right. It's odd that it fell so closely, to the rule review, but, sometimes calendar-wise, they had the meeting really late in the month, this month for some reason. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and go and present our rules on next Tuesday afternoon.
Very good. Thank you, guys. So, Dr. Snyder, do we have a UR report other than the rule changes?
Yes. Wanted to let the committee know that we sent five cases to the penalty unit since our last meeting. One was when we did there was a delay in us receiving the records. There was one, two of them were for delays from the adjuster sending the requested treatment to the utilization review organization. There was one for wrong diagnosis, and then there was one for no listing of the documents that were reviewed. So those five were sent to penalty for notification and warning. And on some of those penalties have been issued, but I've that's not for me to divulge. It's up to the penalty unit if, when they do that. The only other thing that I wanted to make clear was that we have seen two cases where a utilization review physician has denied a treatment without records of any kind and without requesting records. And so I wanted to make it clear to everyone, if they have anything to do with it, that there is a presumption that the treating physician's recommendation is appropriate, and medically necessary. And that presumption is in the code 50-6-2204, subparagraph small a, subparagraph 3, subparagraph H. And so for those types of failure to even look at any records whatsoever will be also sent to penalty. So just to let everybody know that we're trying to make sure that the individual gets the appropriate treatment based upon the recommendations of the treating physician, unless there's substantive reasons to deny it.
Very good. Very good. All right. We'll move forward to the reward program and certified physician program. In terms from the reward program, Susie, do you have an update for us on that?
So I do have one update on reward. Administrator Haley did send out some appointment letters on the 15th or thereabout for the new reward advisory committee. So in the past, there's been a task force advising the Bureau about the reward program. So we've turned that into a more structured advisory committee. So we do have appointments to that. Pretty much everyone who was on the task force was asked to join. But we have some new employer representation and a third-party administrator also on that new committee. So those letters went out. Primarily, we're looking at the advisory committee to help the Bureau on the employer recognition aspect of the program. So we are looking at the honor roll, and we will hopefully have some good advice from the committee in completing the honor roll development and how to do employer recognition and how to get more employers involved in the support network. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Just to let everybody know, I was going to include this under the announcements, but at the next medical advisory committee, we will have a formal presentation on both reward and the certified physician program, and include some slides and some other information. And as well, at the next meeting, we will also have an outline or a summary with slides to outline all of the Bureau programs and bring everybody up to be aware of compliance programs, the ombudsman, and the court processes. So we'll make a formal presentation at the next meeting so that everybody will know a little bit more about what we're doing and won't be so much in the dark. So I hope that would be helpful and beneficial to most people.
Very good. Very good. And of course, I presume everyone knows that the certified physician program is now live. So
go on the website, find out what the requirements are, and start your application and start your education.
Is the list ready yet on the website for those physicians already certified?
I can't tell you whether it's been posted yet or not. So far, we've had three physicians who have completed the training and have been approved by the administrator to be certified physicians. So actually, two of them are on this call. So congratulations to Dr. Hazelwood and also to Dr. Johnson.
Very good. Very good. Any other questions or comments about those programs?
I mean, I'd just like to say that I thought it was very well done. The modules were excellent, and the ability to use the computer, it was freely flowing, and I can't imagine how many hours you folks put into it, but I thought it was really well done, just for what it's worth.
We have a, I must commend Jay Blaisdell and Samantha Collier and Kyle Jones, who are the backbone to that program. Our job, we just had to do what they told us to do and keep from messing up. So those three were instrumental in making that educational effort.
I like the comment as well. I thought it was well done. Very user friendly.
Thank you.
Good. All right. Well, thank you guys for the comments. And I guess we'll move on to COVID update. Hopefully, we won't have too many more of those. But,
okay, COVID Still. Update. So as of the end of August, so August 31st, there were 14,045 reported first reports of injury that were coded for COVID. And then there were an additional ones that had to do with vaccine or inoculation or adverse reactions for a total of 14,545 total first reports of injury related to COVID. Of those, there were 8,564 initial denials. So more than half, about 60% of them were denied. Initial payment and reinstatement of benefits occurred in 1,632. So we're talking about 13 to 14%. Did receive benefits. Now, this does not include numbers where the employer would have allowed the individual to take self-isolation and continued paying the injured worker or the person off. So there were certainly a number of employers whose policy was to pay for that time off, irrespective of why they got COVID or whether or not it was contested. So just be aware of that. So far, there have been 51 fatalities that were whose first report of injury was COVID. Of those, 36 of the 51 were denied. 12 have been accepted, and one is still being processed. So of the 51 related deaths, 12 were accepted as compensable injuries and COVID-related. We have not received any update that any disputes have come before the Court of Workers' Compensation. The mediators have resolved a number of disputes, but at this point in time, there's been no actual court case or hearings on disputed COVID claims.
So those numbers are slowing down, right? Just looking. Yeah, we're in the last 4 months. Yeah, definitely. So, very good. Very good.
I think the it'll be interesting to track, particularly since the actual first reports of injury have significantly been reduced, and so I think that there'll be stable numbers that has to do with denials and benefits. And probably fatalities as well. So unless we've got another surge coming from another variant, I think we're probably reaching the peak of what we're going to see here at the Bureau.
Fingers crossed.
Dr. Snyder, yes. This is Lisa Hartman. Was there a trend as why those people were denied?
No, it's been pretty stable actually since the first few months that the individual would make a claim for COVID and that there was not significant evidence that they received it, that they were in close contact with people at work. One of the things about the numbers is that particularly hospital systems accepted individuals and paid them for time off, and consequently they did not need to close those claims unless the claim had been filed. And so most of these had to do with just the fact that the individual did not have a close contact exposure at work that was significant to allow them to dispute the denial of the claim.
Okay, thank you.
The information from NCCI indicates that almost all of the medical costs of the claim are relatively low, in the neighborhood of averaging $2,000 to $3,000 per claim for medical treatment, and that very few of the claims then reach very high numbers. They had, I believe it was 2021, only four claims nationally that were high dollar figures in the where an individual was in the intensive care unit for long periods of time. So there were very few of those high dollar claims in workers' compensation.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, any other questions, comments regarding any of the old business? If not, we'll move on. Any new business to address this session?
I just made the announcement about the presentations that we'll make next time for reward CPP and bureau programs.
Okay. Well, very good. I guess then our next meeting set for Tuesday, December 13th. Be here before we know it. Anyone have anything else?
Second meeting, we're looking at March 7th or March 14th. Any preferences from anybody on those dates? Okay, we'll go with March 7th. So unless there's substantial changes in and it'll be 2023 by then.
Sounds good. Wow. Very good. Well, Administrator Haley, Dr. Snyder, anyone have anything else or any other participants, anything else for this meeting? All right. Well,
I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody for your participation and attendance.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for attending today. And I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up and adjourn and see everyone in December, if not before.
All right. Thank you, Missy.